from deep inside your radio.
Please join. Whenever you do, please join. Ladies and gentlemen, the buried lead is something I've been pointing out to you over a period of months and perhaps years. Who's counting? But this week comes the latest development in lazy journalism, the buried non-lead. That is to say, what would have been big news if the reporter had just basically bothered to say, what? What do you mean? Dateline Washington, from the Washington Post, U.S. officials have raised a second round of unusually bluntly worded objections to a proposed global warming declaration that Germany prepared for next month's Group of Eight summit, according to documents obtained by the Washington Post. Representatives from the world's leading industrial nations have been meeting to hash out the thing, blah, blah, blah. Here's the news, supposedly. The U.S. still has serious fundamental concerns about this draft statement that's been drafted by the European countries that would call for, you know, setting mandatory emissions targets. Ugh, who wants that? This is from a paper dated May 14th. Quote, this is U.S. talking now. Quote, the treatment of climate change runs counter to our overall position, well, we knew that, and, continuing to quote, crosses multiple red lines in terms of what we simply cannot agree to. We've tried to tread lightly, but there's only so far we can go, given our fundamental opposition to the German position, unquote. Two sides remain at loggerheads. So my question is, red lines, what are those? Apparently they are, by the very use of the term, very defined and precise things beyond which the United States government is not prepared to go on the subject of climate change. What would those be? Have those ever been spelled out publicly? Washington Post? Hello? No, we'll just quote from the documents that somebody dumped on our doorstep. Because that's called journalism. And, ladies and gentlemen, change has come to Guantanamo Bay. No, not just to the bay, to the base, to the prison. Two visiting reporters from the Miami Herald have inspected a 10-week-old garden for some of the detainees. That's right. 10 weeks ago, they decided, hey, you know, they should have a garden. They've been here 5 years with nothing. A garden would be nice. It's two concrete planters containing gardening beds. Seedlings were sprouting when the Miami Herald reporters visited. This, said Army Lieutenant Colonel Todd Melton, deputy commander of the Gitmo scene, this is part of the intellectual stimulation program. You really want your intellect stimulated by the United States Army, don't you? Quote, it just gives them something else to think about. They enjoy doing the plants. They have tomatoes, and I believe the other ones are some type of melon. Of course, they're just seedlings right now. This is the same place where a year ago commanders described a detainee uprising. It's been downsized from 175 to at most 60 to 70, although present population is fewer than 40 Arabs and Afghanis. The younger ones like to play sports, said the lieutenant commander, but the older guys like to come in here and fool with the garden. Another change at Gitmo, after years of reporters carrying their notebooks through the various prison camps, an Army escort officer now declared the main detention center a notebook-free zone, fearing that someone during the media tour might weaponize the spiral springs holding the pages together. And the other change at Gitmo, noticed by the Miami Herald reporters, no longer for sale are the mock guard undershirts at the Gitmo souvenir shop. The mock guard undershirts that used to read, Behavior Modification Instructor. Hello, welcome to the show. We're making good progress. A lot of good people working hard.
Spread a canvas of one life to capture what's in.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, before we do anything further, it's the apologies of the week, because
we're so sorry.
Because we're so very, very sorry this week. Dateline Jerusalem, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, apologized for comments about Jonathan Pollard, the convicted spy who once worked for the Pentagon, saying the remarks were misinformed and misleading. Ambassador Richard Jones had said the United States had been lenient by not executing the former Pentagon analyst who was convicted of spying on behalf of, transferring military secrets to Israel while working at the Pentagon. Let's just put it that way. In a statement released by the U.S. Embassy, Jones said his comments did not reflect my personal views nor those of the Bush administration. Whose views would they be then? Put on an all-point bulletin for those views. Quote, I certainly do not personally believe that Mr. Pollard should have received capital punishment, and I was appalled to learn that I had given that impression, Jones said. I regret any distress that I may have caused Mr. Pollard's family and loved ones. If I ever find out whose thoughts I did... No, he didn't say that. Dateline Washington, White House hopeful John McCain apologized to a fellow Republican senator for last week's foul-mouthed temper tantrum during heated negotiations over immigration reform. Texas Senator John Cornyn said he had accepted McCain's apology for the outburst last week during a meeting in a room off the Senate chamber. After Cornyn suggested McCain had skipped out on important negotiations, McCain snapped back, F you. He wasn't referring to Florida University either. The Alabama legislature has passed a resolution this week expressing profound regret for Alabama's role in slavery and apologizing for slavery's wrongs and lingering effects on the United States. Hey, this thing is catching on. Alabama is the fourth southern state to pass a slavery apology. And Alabama governor's spokesman said the Republican governor, Bob Riley, would keep a commitment he made earlier to sign the resolution as soon as he receives it. Hey, it's never too late. Dateline Cincinnati, Cincinnati Bengals coach Marvin Lewis has apologized for comments about alleged profiling of his players. He gave a radio interview that drew a response from Cincinnati Police Chief Tom Stryker. Lewis had noted that wide receiver Chris Henry was pulled over in March after not signaling a turn while driving in Cincinnati, a sign to him that there was profiling being done. But now, Lewis says in a statement, he does not believe Cincinnati police are targeting his players. He says, quoting, I apologize that what I said did not reflect my true feelings, unquote. There's an epidemic of that going on. Who's programming these people to speak things they don't believe? Dateline Cape Canaveral, NASA's top lawyer said that he destroyed several DVDs of a talk between the space agency's boss and the staff of the internal watchdog agency, apparently the Inspector General's office, because he wanted to make sure the meeting details weren't made public. I personally made the decision to destroy them, said NASA's General Counsel Michael Holy at a House subcommittee hearing. I did so by breaking them into pieces and throwing them in the trash. Holy apologized and said in respect he wished he could give the panel a recording of the meeting, but at the time he considered it to be private and one that shouldn't be recorded. He worried that if the DVDs were kept by the agency, they could be subject to public record laws. Well, that'll take care of it. Too bad Nixon didn't think of that. Eric Zabel and Rolf Aldag, former teammates of two Tour de France winners, admitted this week they took performance-enhancing drugs while riding for the team in the 1990s. They said they took the blood-boosting drug EPO. They now say they're ashamed of their actions and apologized. Zabel broke into tears during his confession. Dateline Conifer, Colorado, families offended by photos and text of student alcohol and drug use published in the Conifer High School yearbook can get their money back or have their copies treated, school officials announced this week. The issue, quite honestly, for me is that there are some things in the yearbook that I don't feel like I can defend, Principal Pat Terman said, in looking at the overall tone and some specific pictures and some specific quotes, I really do believe that we have crossed the line, said the principal. The yearbook advisor, Amy McTagg, apologized for what she called, quote, my poor judgment. Crossing the line. I wonder if that's the same line that Monica Goodling said she crossed, the aide to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, said in this week's congressional testimony that she crossed a line when she used political considerations to evaluate career employees. And she was asked, by a line, do you mean the law? Well, I crossed the line. It's illegal, of course, to do what she crossed the line doing. That's just wondering about those lines people crossed. Ladies and gentlemen, Fox has apologized, but don't get excited. Fox Television Network has apologized for having American Idol's show, the finale, run long. The show was scheduled to end at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, but the winner was announced at 10:03, and the show ended at 10:09. As a result, many viewers who recorded the show on their TiVos missed the announcement of the winner. We're sorry that DVR users may have missed the conclusion of the American Idol broadcast, said a spokesperson for Fox, not named, not proud, just not named. It was always our intention to bring the show in on time, but just as with any live sports, variety awards, or entertainment event, there is no way to absolutely guarantee that the show will end exactly on the hour. Fox and the producers apologize to those viewers who were inconvenienced. I want to frame that, man. That's a 400th episode gift. A framed Fox apology. The Spanish fashion retail giant Zara has apologized to ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel for selling men's suits that violate a religious prohibition against mixing wool and linen. That's according to a company spokesperson. Zara has withdrawn the offending garments from its racks. Jewish law prohibits the wearing of wool and linen blends known as shatnez, and the ultra-Orthodox carefully inspect materials of unknown fibers. Some 40 or 50 Israeli clients complained about the shatnez suits. The conservatively dressed Orthodox Jews are not a mainstay of the popular Zara shops in Israel, but the Jerusalem Post pointed out they do manage to find classic cuts amid the low necklines and high hems. We'll leave the rest of that story to your imagination. The Washington Redskins apologized this week for comments running back Clinton Portis made during a television interview. The comments ridiculed authorities for pursuing possible dogfighting charges against teammate Michael Vick. Tackle Chris Samuel said he was wrong for joking about dogfighting during the interview he and Portis did. No, he's not a teammate. He's at the Atlanta Falcons. Sorry about that. Said the Redskins in a statement, the Washington Redskins as an organization obviously would never condone anything related to animal cruelty. The team takes the recent comments of Clinton Portis very seriously and apologizes to everyone that was offended. Portis had said, Vic would be put behind bars for no reason if he were charged and convicted for dogfighting. The team had earlier released a statement on behalf of Portis in which the running back was quoted as saying, quote, I want to make it clear I do not take part in dogfighting or condone dogfighting in any manner, unquote. Hope we cleared that up. By the way, last week I ad-libbed that the Southern Ocean was, no doubt, by that usage, they meant the Arctic. Of course I meant the Antarctic. Thank you for correcting my foolish lapse. Deadline Atlanta, the chief executive of Home Depot, Frank Blake, apologized this week to shareholders at the company's annual meeting, saying he regretted the now infamous meeting last year when members of the board stayed home and his predecessor as chief executive refused to take questions from investors. We apologize for last year's meeting, Blake said. It was a mistake, and we won't do it again. Well, of course, you can't do last year's meeting again. This is this year. Representative John Murtha has apologized to Representative Mike Rogers after a motion to rebuke Murtha failed on the House floor. Of course, I apologize for my outburst, Murtha said in an interview. He had sent a letter of apology, not being released since its private communication. Congressman Rogers has accepted the apology. Murtha had previously apologized to his Democratic colleagues for the behavior that led to Rogers' resolution of proposed censure. Murtha had threatened to never approve an earmark in a defense bill by Rogers in retaliation for something Rogers did. It's just, you know, house business, ladies and gentlemen. A British TV station apologized this week after regulators ruled that the Celebrity Big Brother program broke broadcasting rules by airing footage of racist insults being hurled at Bollywood star Shilpa Shetty. I feel Shetty. Britain's communication regulator Ofcom said Channel 4 should have halted the offensive behavior. One incident included Jade Goody, a dental assistant turned tabloid celebrity. That's all you really need to know about that story. That phrase, a dental assistant turned tabloid celebrity. What a wonderful world we live in when that can happen. And in apologies from the music business, Scott Stapp has issued a public apology following his domestic violence arrest last weekend. I'm truly sorry and seeks forgiveness from my wife, says the former lead singer for the Christian rock group Creed. No smirking allowed. And the company behind Doc Martens footwear, Airwear Limited, has fired its advertising agency in the wake of controversy surrounding a British ad campaign that includes a photo of Kurt Cobain. The chief executive said the poster campaign wasn't supposed to go public. Dr. Martens did not commission the work as it runs counter to our current marketing activities, he said in a statement, although the ad agency is standing by the ad campaign. Courtney Love, the widow, had said she didn't give permission for the company to use a photo of her late husband. Well, there was an apology buried there somewhere, but not evident to the naked eye at this point. Despite that, the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, are a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Yes, I'm still here, just thinking about Pakistan. It's starting to become news that Pakistan is a wacky place for us to be. Dependent on for our security in the way we are. Some straws in the wind this week. Pakistan's tourism minister has withdrawn her resignation. Government leaders have assured her of their support, despite the fact she was condemned by radical Islamic clergy persons for hugging a foreign man. She hugged a foreign man. Niloufar Bakhtiar was caught up in a 3-month standoff between authorities and clerics at a mosque in the capital. The clerics are campaigning to impose Islamic law, and in the course of their campaign, what they've been doing is kidnapping policemen and setting up their own court. The court condemned Bakhtiar last month for un-Islamic behavior after a newspaper published a photograph of her embracing her parachute instructor in France after she made a charity jump to help Kashmir earthquake victims. She was going to quit the cabinet, complaining that President General Pervez gave her too little public backing. What else is going on in Pakistan? Oh, man. The United States this week hailed Pakistan as a great friend. Not a good friend, a great friend, and expressed its continued support for President General Pervez. We have a very close relationship with President Musharraf. We strongly supported President Musharraf and will continue to do so, says Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns. Burns? Nope, don't get excited. He also voiced the hope that further counterterrorism efforts can be made by Pakistan in the border region. By further, he probably means some, since Pakistan signed that deal with the warlords in that border region. We hope, said our Undersecretary of State, progress can be made in building Pakistan's own democracy in the months and years ahead. The President General, who's running for an unprecedented third term, has made it clear that if either leader of an opposition party tries to set foot in Pakistan, they're exiled at the moment, they'll be arrested. That's progress. They could have been executed. I'm not reflecting anybody's views when I say that. Burns said the U.S. is concerned about the increase in number and severity of attacks by the Taliban. But there's more about Pakistan. It will look into allegations, it now says, that its peacekeeping force in the Congo traded in gold and weapons with the militias it was supposed to be disarming. The BBC reported the possibility that that happened, and the UN's Department of Peacekeeping Operations is now looking into it. Pakistani troops and other peacekeepers in the Congo's volatile east traded arms for gold with rebels who still operate in the region. A UN team was sent to investigate the charges last year, has yet to come out with its official report. But the BBC says that's what's going on. And Reuters says there's jitters in Pakistan. There's uncertainty about the president. Many people don't think he'll last the crisis, says Talal Masood. The crisis was started when President General Musharraf fired the head of the Supreme Court. Can you do that? His position has deteriorated dramatically since... Well, he didn't fire him. He suspended him. Suspension. First half of May was marked by a large-scale demonstration of public support for the judge in Lahore. Can you say that on the radio? And a week later, about 40 people were killed in clashes between pro- and government, anti-government supporters in Karachi. Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen, are not a good friend, our great friend. And because it's Sunday in much of the world, the Sunday newspapers in England particularly specialize in frightening stories. And here's my favorite, which just came to my attention, partly because coincidentally, really, this week the Coca-Cola company announced it was spending $4 billion, four B as in billion, billion dollars, to buy vitamin water. No, not buy the bottle, to buy the company. You see what I'm saying? So that would be coincidental, would it not? In the face of this story in the Independent newspaper from London, a new health scare has erupted over soft drinks last night. How many people were scared on Saturday night in London, do you think, about this? Amid evidence they may cause serious cell damage, research from a British university suggests a common preservative found in drinks such as Pepsi Max. Do we have Pepsi Max in this country? Max? Has the ability to switch off vital parts of DNA. Oh, just that. The problem, more usually associated with aging and alcohol abuse, can eventually lead to cirrhosis of the liver and Parkinson's. Concerns center on the safety of E211, known as sodium benzoate, a preservative used for decades by the soft drinks business. Sodium benzoate derives from benzoic acid. Wait a minute, I should read that. It's a scientific note. So, sodium benzoate derives from benzoic acid. It occurs naturally in berries, but is used in large quantities to prevent mold. You wouldn't want mold in your Sprite, would you? See, so stop bitching. Stop bitching about the preservatives. You want mold in your Sprite, you come talk to me. It's also added to pickles and sauces, is sodium benzoate. Sodium benzoate is subject of concern about cancer because when mixed with the additive vitamin C, vitamin C can't hurt you, it causes benzene, which is known to cause cancer. An expert in aging at Sheffield University has been working on sodium benzoate since publishing a research paper in 1999. Is speaking out. Professor Peter Piper. Oh, come on. Pickles? Peter Piper? Is this April? No, it's not. He's a professor of molecular biology and biotechnology, tested the impact of sodium benzoate on living yeast cells. What he found alarmed him. The benzoate was damaging an important area of DNA in the power station of cells known as the mitochondria. He says these chemicals have the ability to cause severe damage to DNA in the mitochondria to the point they totally inactivate it. They knock it out altogether. The mitochondria consumes the oxygen to give you energy, and if you damage it, as happens in a number of diseased states, then the cell starts to malfunction very seriously. Professor Piper said tests conducted by the U.S. FDA were out of date on the subject. The food industry says these compounds have been tested and are safe. By the criteria of modern safety testing, the safety tests were inadequate. Safety testing moves forward. He advised parents to think carefully about buying drinks with preservatives. Coke, of course, Diet Pepsi all contain sodium benzoate. The British Soft Drinks Association say they entrust the safety of additives to the government. All right, then. We can relax. And now for your weekend excitement.
It's coming. The fighting event of the year. Two men, one ring, no rules. Extreme Ultimate Fighting. EUF rules, dude. Dante Tiger Cheeks versus Jesus El Loco Godoy. One will be left standing. The other, who knows? 25 rounds. Fists, feet, and for the first time on pay-per-view, Chainsaw.
It's not ultimate. It's not extreme. It's Extreme Ultimate.
Trained medical personnel will be standing by in a nearby hospital throughout this event. But that's as close as they'll get. Extreme Ultimate Fighting 1, the beginning, will definitely not be shown again. If you miss it, it's gone.
There's nothing like it except in games.
This is no video game. This is real. Extreme Ultimate Fighting, taking it to the next level. Via pay-per-view in theaters and gentlemen's clubs. From EUF Productions, home of Extreme Poker.
A memory is all I have to keep me
This is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. This from Animal Feed and Animal Nutrition News. The Bible of Animal Feed and Animal Nutrition. China keeps violating U.S. food standards. I'll read it for you. I want to have a soft drink while you're listening. China is a top violator of U.S. food safety standards, with U.S. authorities last month rejecting 257 Chinese food shipments, far more than from any other country. At least 137 food shipments were rejected as filthy. I think that's a term of art. After testing positive for salmonella or for containing banned ingredients. The FDA last month seized more than 1,000 shipments of tainted dietary supplements, toxic cosmetics, and counterfeit medicines from China. A good portion of the rejected Chinese shipments each month includes fish and seafood like catfish, shrimp, mahi-mahi, tilapia, eel, and yellowfin tuna. Parenthetically, there was a report this week also that a shipment from China, supposedly of monkfish, may in fact be poisonous pufferfish. But that's just poisonous, not filthy. Back to the article. Other Chinese imports that failed inspection include herbal teas, bean curd, candy, dried apples, dried peaches, peanut milk, catheters, and lip gloss. Got a problem with a filthy catheter? China, which exports about $2 billion each year in food products, not only is a cheap supplier of a growing number of important food products, but for some key foodstuffs, it is virtually the sole purveyor. China now dominates the world's production of ascorbic acid, which is a valuable preservative that is ubiquitous in processed foods. Parenthetically, it's the ascorbic acid that combines with the sodium benzoate, blah, blah, blah. But that don't blame the ascorbic acid for that. Or, U.S. companies have become so dependent on the Chinese exports, back to the article, that they may be reluctant to reduce the flow of goods. U.S. agriculture officials have seized hundreds of tons of prohibited poultry products from China and other Asian countries, including some shipped in crates labeled dried lily flower and prune slices. See, that's the tip-off, because California, we don't call them prunes anymore. Menu Foods, North America's biggest maker of wet pet foods, and the company that launched the pet food recall that started this whole thing, is announcing it's phasing out ingredients from China. It won't resume using them until Menu and the, quote, world community, unquote, are assured they're safe. And their consultant for the world community's opinion is John Bolton. No. Just made that up. So the drinking's good and the eating's better. And don't look too closely at that catheter. Words to the wise when I read the trades for you. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Now let's shift our gaze to Iraq, if we might. The new Iraq. And what is exactly going on? The Bush administration, according to the Boston Globe, has dismantled a special committee that was established just last year to coordinate aggressive actions against Iran and Syria. It met weekly throughout much of last year to coordinate actions such as curtailing Iran's access to credit, organizing the sale of military equipment to some of Iran's fine neighbors, and supporting democratic forces that oppose the two regimes, even though some of those, quote, democratic forces are on the State Department's terrorist watch list. State Department and White House officials say the dissolution of the group was simply a bureaucratic reorganization. Many analysts see it as evidence of a softening in the U.S. strategy towards Syria and Iran. That's one straw or one wind. Reuters reports this week that Gulf Arab countries meeting in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, have agreed to step up security cooperation to confront a new generation of militants spawned in the fertile ground of Iraq. Prince Nayef bin Abdulaziz, Saudi's interior minister, announced the move, saying Iraq represents a security threat for the entire region. Quote, the security situation in Iraq is deteriorating and terrorism is growing there. So says the Saudi interior minister. Must be reading the media. Iraq has become fertile ground for creating a new generation of terrorists, learning and practicing all forms of murder and destruction, continued the Saudi interior minister. Hey, weren't some of the 9/11 hijackers Saudis? Quote, the lax security situation in Iraq bears great dangers for our region and stability in our countries. And you probably know this. Months before the invasion of Iraq, U.S. intelligence agencies predicted it would be likely to spark violent sectarian divides and provide al-Qaeda with new opportunities in Iraq and Afghanistan. That, according to the report issued this week by the Senate Committee on Intelligence. Analysts also warned that invading Iraq could provoke Iran to assert its regional influence and probably would result in a surge of political Islam and increased funding for terrorist groups in the Muslim world. These assessments were made in January of 2003. Too bad they weren't circulated in the Bush administration. Oh, I see, they were. The U.S. military is joining forces with the State Department to prepare a new Iraq strategy that includes negotiating ceasefire and power-sharing agreements with some enemy combatants, U.S. officials announced Wednesday. We don't negotiate with terrorists until we do. A joint campaign plan redesign team is preparing the diplomatic and military strategy for Iraq, which is expected to be approved by the end of this month. One element of the plan is to try to identify groups of people, possibly including Sunni extremists and militia groups, with whom U.S. officials feel they can do business, such as negotiating power sharing and ceasefire agreements and granting economic aid. The New York Times on Saturday led with a front page report that the White House is thinking about cutting our troop strength in Iraq in half by 2008. Gee, that would... What's going on in 2008? And in a sidebar, I had an interview with the American ground commander in Iraq, Lieutenant General Raymond Odierno. I think we read... I read to you some of his stunningly wrong conclusions earlier on in the war, quoted in the book Fiasco. But now he's running things, and he urges patience to those seeking quick progress. When the pullback does come, he says no one should expect it to be rapid. We'll do this in a very deliberate way, says General Odierno. I call this thinning the lines. We won't take everybody out at once. What is going on? Might take a phone call to find out.
Victorious Eagle. Hey, 43, congratulations. Great victory in the Congress. Yeah, well, thanks, 41. Not that big a deal, really. Just a matter of making the Democrats blink, which is what they do anyway.
Well, everybody blinks.
I mean, when you stare at them, you know, The dams always blink. It's just like they got Tourette syndrome or something. Think Lee Atwater did that to them. Think after the 88 campaign, the dams were so wary of a shot from Lee, they started seeing him in every political shadow.
Yeah, till they beat a certain relative of mine.
Well, now, those weren't Democrats. Those were Clintons. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
You know, been talking a little bit to Mr. Clinton as we do our charity fly-ins. He's got some stories on him, tell you that.
Yeah. He's got something else on him, too, and they're made of steel.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I'm saying, except when I would get around to it, I'd actually use the word.
Well, of course you would, and that's why you and Mom are going to inherit a slightly messier slice of heaven than Laura and I. But, see, keeps amazing me that the Dems don't grasp Carl's chicken principle.
They don't grasp his chicken what?
You know, two guys playing chicken, the one who throws away his steering wheel wins.
Unless the other guy then throws his away, too.
Well, that's the great thing about our Democrat friends. They put in a second steering wheel and gave it to me.
Yeah.
That's what Carl says. I just know what we ought to do is run an ad where Harry Reid is dressed the same woman as Nancy Pelosi. I mean, that says it all.
So, now you got your war funding bill, you got the timeline sounding like a lockbox, so now you guess you hunker down into the meat of the surge.
Yeah, I wish. I mean, I really do believe this fella, General Petraeus, he really does understand the culturifics of the Iraqi people, and if we'd gone with Plan A and kept this thing going until my successor steps up to the plate, you know, he'd have had a good chance of winning this thing.
But
we're deep into Plan B now.
Plan B would be your Republican friends getting nervous.
Yeah, more nervous than a Thai child bride. I mean, you know what Arnie calls girly man? Gee, his skin looks bad close up. But yeah, we're on a tight schedule for the first round of heavy thinning by the time of the convention.
Kind of like a timeline.
Well, but see, there's my edge right there. If the opposition thinks you're dumb, they stop trying to rationalify your logic. So in the narrative of the thing, beating the Democrats on the timeline is essential to the story of us having our own timeline.
It's a twist.
See, Andy Card, you know, got me into all this. We'd sit around for hours, and he'd do these really deep analyses of the plot lines of his favorite movies. And he's the one who told Carl, you know, you do the policy, I'll do the narrative.
Didn't that kind of give the enemy the incentive to start a real duty fest about 6 weeks before the next election?
Well, now, who does that help more? The Dems, who by then Carl will have looking softer than a marshmallow teddy bear, or us?
No, hey, look, not saying that doesn't convince me, but it may not convince nervous Republicans.
Yeah, too many knots in the sentence there. Some double negativity.
Must say the whole bloody August deal took me by surprise. Kind of got used to, guess you'd call it a more consistently optimistic tone from you, Sprint. This bloody August thing, I don't know, sounded almost like realism.
Yeah, dream on, 43. Just some inoculating. If we say it's going to be bloody and it turns out to be bloody, guess what? That's old news, you know? Some good people getting killed, other good people working hard, making good progress. We're moving forward.
So, you've got breathing space for September when General Petraeus makes his report on the surge, and the verdict is, what, mission accomplished?
Not in so such many words. No, sir, of course not. We realize that's a spoiled brand. But the verdict is, great job, General Petraeus. Too bad we couldn't stick around to do the whole thing, but the training wheels have to come off the bike sometime. Otherwise, it's just always going to be a track plus one.
And the dams will be sputtering because they're dams. Yeah, and if it's not a bloody August, then this urge worked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't look like such a disaster now, does it?
Didn't say that, but got to admit, you have a great amount of confidence in this this narrative theory.
Yeah, well, 41 Conde said this a couple weeks ago on a exercise bike, confidence is belief's strong right bicep.
Mm-hmm. And Dick Cheney's okay with all this?
You know, he's the key guy in the whole thing. He's the guy who keeps threatening to rip out the steering wheel.
Yeah, okay. Still bothered by this, though. It's late September 2008.
Yeah.
Troops are half thinned. Mm-hmm. Iraq starts falling off a cliff. And our office-seeking Republican friends get downright apoplectic.
Gotcha. Well, then the Dickster gets lucky.
Troops go back in?
Nope. They withdraw to the east.
Well, Iran's to the east.
Yeah, that was Dick's point.
Okay, 43, good to hear you sounding optimistic. Barr will be glad to hear it. She's been worrying about you.
Just tell her what Conda told me.
Oh, what's that?
Worry is belief's chronically sore Achilles tendon.
Will do. Take care of 43.
You too, 41.
Look out where you're going. There's danger ahead. The signal is showing a definite red. Look out what you're doing. You're caught in a plot. Whatever she's brewing, stay out of the pot. You better get wise. Here's what I advise. When she sighs for a squeeze, freeze, blame it on the breeze. Start to sneeze, get the measles. She'll get you off balance, then suddenly shove. Duck when she throws her hook out. Don't let your heart get took out. Pick up your pack and cook out. Look out, look out, it's love. Look out when you're rowing. Stay close to the bank. That river is flowing right into the tank. Look out when you ramble. You're out on the loose. You're liable to amble right into a noose. You better look out. I better turn about like a trout at the dam. Scram, take it on the lamb. It's a jam. It's a stampede. She'll talk to her lawyer. Whereby and whereof. She'll get the marriage book out. She'll pick the perfect nook out. Her welcome mat's been shook out. A look out, a look out for love.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, time for news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
The Smithsonian Institution toned down an exhibit on climate change in the Arctic for fear of angering Congress and the Bush administration, says a former administrator at the museum. Among other things, the script of last year's exhibit was rewritten to minimize and inject more uncertainty into the relationship between global warming and humans, says Robert Sullivan, who is associate director in charge of exhibitions. Also, officials omitted scientists' interpretation of some research and let visitors draw their own conclusions from the data. Graphs were altered to show that global warming could go either way, Sullivan said. It just became tooth-pulling to get solid science out without toning it down, he said. He resigned last fall after 16 years at the museum. Some scientists who consulted on the project said nothing major was omitted. Smithsonian officials denied political concerns influenced them. And the world's recent carbon dioxide emissions are growing more rapidly than even the worst-case climate scenario used by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, according to researchers. The team, led by Michael Ropatch of the Australian Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, looked at the growth of CO2 emissions and found that emissions growth suddenly accelerated in the year 2000. Well, that's to celebrate the biennial, bicentennial. During the 1990s, emissions grew by 1.1% a year on average, but the number shot up to 3.3% between 2000 and 2004. The team found reality was at least as bad, if not worse, than the UN-backed IPCC's worst-case scenario. The team then examined the changes between 1980 and 2004, population, economic growth, energy efficiency, and carbon efficiency. From this, they determined why the CO2 emissions accelerated after 2000. Not due to a growth in global population, but a reduction in global efficiency. Quote, we are not getting more efficient at using carbon dioxide in the way we projected, explained co-author of the report. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, it is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And FEMA has awarded nearly 4,000 no-bid contracts. House members are now trying to write legislation that would require competition for most contracts. Hey, never too late. The list of 4,000 no-bid contracts, which FEMA recently sent to the House Appropriations Committee, is one of the highest numbers ever disclosed for any agency across the government for no-bid contracts. And the United States this week scrapped a key missile defense test. The dummy missile that was supposed to have been the target went astray. Well, if you can't even control your targets. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant, WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, shortwave. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available when you're in Berlin on the mighty 104 FM. Available on XM and Sirius satellite radio. Available as a free download from www.audible.com/theshow and available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it would be just like me stopping reading that incredibly boring list every week, and I'm not even reading it, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, huh? The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world. As you know this as well as I do, as the home of the homeless.